Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila, and Leo will be right along. We have a good show tonight. We have a lot of news and some audios to play. So we're really glad you could be with us. And we're going to start off with 65 ways that everything that you think that you own is being systematically taken away from you. And this is kind of interesting. Everything that you own is slowly being taken away from you. It's being done purposefully, and it's being done by design. Many Americans like to think of themselves as well off. But as will be demonstrated below, we don't own nearly as much as we think that we do. The truth is that most of us have to frantically run around accumulating wealth as rapidly as we can so that we can somehow stay ahead of the rate that wealth is being taken away from us. The entire system is designed to take what you have away from you. There are many ways that this is accomplished: taxation, inflation, debt, interest, fines, fees, tickets, government seizure, and good old-fashioned corporate greed. If you try just to sit back and do nothing but hold on to the wealth that you already have, you would find out that it would disappear rather quickly. When you take the time to really analyze our system, the conclusion is undeniable. Everything that you think you own is being systematically taken away from you. There is a reason why the wealthiest 1% of all Americans control 40% of the wealth in the United States. The system is designed to funnel all the wealth to them and to the government. Average Americans are experiencing a declining standard of living, and it is not by accident. Just check out some of the ways that our wealth is being taken away from us. Number one, do you think you own your own house? You might want to think again. Most Americans that own a home are paying a mortgage. If you stop paying that mortgage, then you will lose that home. Over a million American families were kicked out of their homes last year. This year, a million more American families will get the boot. But when those families get booted out onto the street, they don't get their down payments back. They don't get all the mortgage payments that they have made back. The bank gets to keep all the money in all of the houses. Perhaps you don't have a mortgage. Does that mean you own your own home? Well, not really. Just refuse to pay your property tax and watch what happens. At best, you can say that you have the right to rent your home from the government. In any event, the reality is that banks now own more of our homes than we do. During the most recent recession, the total amount of U.S. home equity owned by the banks surpassed the total amount of U.S. home equity owned by the rest of us for the first time ever. Things used to be far different in this country. Once upon a time, American families owned most of the houses and most of the land in this nation. But now the banks own most of it. Sadly, most American families that believe that they own homes are actually enslaved to 20 to 30-year debt contracts. Do you think you own your own car? Hey, Leo's here. Say hello, Leo.
Yes, I've been reading along with you here.
I think I own my own car, but let's see.
Well, you don't.
You don't. That's what it says. You don't own it if you're still... No, I'm not making any payments on it.
If you
stop making payments, you will rapidly lose the car, sort of like the house.
But even if your car is paid off, you can only operate that car if you do the following. You must pay the license fee. You must pay the car registration fee. You must pay the emissions inspection fee.
Yeah.
You must pay the property taxes on the car.
Yeah.
And you must pay the tire taxes, and you must pay the gas taxes. And if you have paid all of those taxes, then you are permitted to drive only where the government allows you to drive and only under the rules that the government sets for you. But at least you own your car, right? Well, number three.
What about your possessions? Do you own them? I think I do, like my TV and stuff. Well, yes, you probably own some possessions, but that doesn't mean they're not enslaving you. After all, did you use a credit card to pay for any of them? Yeah, I paid for all my appliances that way. Okay, if so, you could end up paying much more for your possessions than you originally thought they cost. No, I pay it right off. For example,
She got a discount using the credit card.
Yeah. For example, if you only make the
guarantee too.
Yeah.
They guarantee on that thing too.
Yeah. If you only make the minimum payment on your credit card each month, a $6,000 credit card bill could end up costing you over $30,000, depending on the interest rate. Do you own your education? Well, it's undeniable that nobody can ever take it away from you, but if you took out a student loan, that debt may add up, enslaving you for decades. The borrower is the servant of the lender, and the student loan debt is more of a financial drain on Americans than ever before. Americans now owe more on student loans than they do on credit card. As hard as that is to believe, this is actually true. Americans now owe more than $903 billion on student loans, which is an all-time record.
Oh, okay. And where are you? Oh, okay. Number five, will you protect your wealth if you put your money in the bank? No.
I thought so.
In fact, your wealth will be systematically destroyed in the bank. Inflation is a hidden tax on every single dollar that you own. It destroys the value of the dollar in existence. There are some Americans that have been saving money for decades, but those savings are being taxed into oblivion by inflation. And many experts now projecting that the average price of a gallon of gasoline will hit $5 by the end of the year. So the next time you go to the gas pump, take a moment to think about how your wealth is being drained away by inflation. Number six, insurance costs. There are actually 65 of these, but these are the major ones. I'll just read a few more of them. Insurance. Here we go. Insurance costs continue to soar. After insuring everything in our lives, many of us barely have any money left over to actually live our lives with. In particular, health insurance premiums have become completely and totally ridiculous. According to the Los Angeles Times, Blue Shield of California plans to raise rates an average of 30 to 35%. And some individual policyholders could see their health insurance premiums rise by a whopping 59% this year alone. So how are American families supposed to survive if they keep on handing over bigger and bigger chunks of their income to the healthcare industry?
State and local governments all over the nation, this is number seven, have turned to ticket writing as a primary revenue source. In fact, in some areas of the country, traffic citations are soaring at a crazy rate. For example, 110,000 more traffic citations were written in Los Angeles County last fiscal year than were written in the fiscal year immediately prior to the last recession. The truth is that the police even realize what's going on. Just consider the following quote from Police Chief Michael Reeves of Utica, Michigan. When I first started in this job 30 years ago, the police work was never about revenue enhancement. But if you're a chief now, you have to look at whether your department produces revenues. Number eight.
Some states have decided to simply confiscate wealth even if nothing has been done wrong. For example, the state of California is aggressively seizing unclaimed safe deposit boxes. If you have a safe deposit box that you have not checked on in a while, you might want to make sure that it's still there. And number nine,
you might end up losing your valuables when you cross the border. It's being reported that U.S. border agents are now regularly seizing laptops and other electronic devices as people cross the border. In many cases, those items are never returned. Number 10.
If you don't pay your taxes, your property taxes, you will lose your house, and it will likely be a big Wall Street bank that will take it, that will be taking it from you. As I have written about previously, the big Wall Street banks are buying up thousands upon thousands of tax liens and are making a killing by socking distressed homeowners with predatory interest, outrageous penalties, and almost unbelievable legal fees. 11, of course,
the biggest way that our wealth is being drained is through federal income taxes. The reason that the Federal Reserve and the IRS were established back in 1913 was to redistribute the wealth. Wealth is transferred from the American people to the U.S. government and then ultimately to the elite and to the causes the elite favor. But federal taxes are only one of the taxes that we pay. The truth is that the average American pays dozens of different taxes each year. Just check out a few examples of the different taxes that drain our wealth. Accounts receivable tax, building permit taxes, capital gains taxes, CDL license taxes, cigarette taxes, corporate income taxes, court fines, dog license taxes, federal unemployment taxes, fishing license taxes, food license taxes, gasoline taxes, gift taxes, hunting license taxes,
inheritance taxes, inventory taxes, IRS interest charges,
tax on top of tax,
tax on top of tax, IRS penalties, tax on top of tax, liquor taxes, local income taxes, luxury taxes, marriage license taxes, Medicare taxes, payroll taxes, property taxes, real estate taxes, recreational vehicle taxes, road toll booth taxes, road usage taxes, truckers, and sales taxes.
Self-employment taxes, school taxes, septic permit taxes, service charge taxes, Social Security taxes, state income taxes, state unemployment taxes, telephone federal excise taxes, telephone federal universal service fee taxes, telephone federal, state, and local surcharge taxes, telephone minimum usage surcharge tax, telephone reoccurring and non-reoccurring taxes, telephone state and local taxes, telephone usage charge taxes, toll bridge taxes, toll tunnel taxes, traffic fines, trailer registration taxes, utility taxes, vehicle license registration taxes, vehicle sales taxes, watercraft registration taxes, well permit taxes, workman's compensation taxes. That's 65.
And even if the future is being taken away from us, the future is literally being stolen from our children and our grandchildren. They'll be inheriting the $14 trillion and still rising national debt that we have accumulated. What we have done to future generations is unthinkable, and yet we continue to endlessly borrow more money. The Congressional Research Services estimates that the U.S. government will need to borrow $738 billion between April 1st and September 30th. Faith in U.S. Treasuries is falling so rapidly that now the biggest bond future fund in the world, PIMCO, is actually shorting U.S. Treasuries.
When you base an entire economy on debt, eventually end up with money problems that never seem to end. As a nation, we are now enslaved to the vicious spiral of debt that is going to destroy everything that our forefathers worked so hard to build. As the debt loads of our federal, state, and local governments become even more burdensome, they're going to want even more money from us. For decades, we gave in to new tax after new tax, thinking it would finally satisfy them. But it never seems to be enough. They always want more.
It is the same thing with the banksters. They are never satisfied either. They always want more assets, and they always want more Americans to be enslaved to debt. And unfortunately, most Americans are so caught up in the rat race that they never take much time to think about who designed the race or why they are running. And hopefully more Americans will wake up and will realize that our entire economy and our entire financial system need to be reformed. Our current system is inherently flawed and will eventually impoverish the vast majority of us if we allow it to. Wow.
How about that?
And that was from the economic collapse.
Are you prepared for the coming economic collapse and the next Great Depression?
This is the economic collapse.
And who was that by? Who wrote that article?
The guy who does this page.
Yeah. I didn't see a name.
Yeah.
I was kind of looking for one.
Oh. I got...
It was a great article. I think he did a good job. Wherever
Great
it was.
Next Depression. You want to read that?
Yeah.
So I don't know what he's going to say, but let's see. Trouble that most people think. Walmart says serious.
Oh, this might be. Walmart says. That's kind of like a bellwether.
Yeah. Thank you, Ben Bernanke, for all the money printing thanks to a massive injection of cash in the financial system by the Federal Reserve and other central banks. The price of almost every major commodity has skyrocketed over the past 6 months. And now those price increases are starting to filter down to the retail level, during a recent meeting with USA Today editorial board, Walmart CEO Bill Simon said that the rising inflation in the United States is going to be serious, and that Walmart is seeing cost increases starting to come through at a pretty rapid rate. For many years, Walmart has been famous for their low prices, so for the head of Walmart to publicly warn that much higher prices are coming is more than a little alarming. There are millions of American families that are already drowning in debt, that can barely pay their mortgages, and that are struggling to put food on the table for their families. So what is going to happen to the U.S. economy when prices start rising substantially at places like Walmart?
Let's see.
But
Walmart is not the only major corporation that says that inflation is coming. Hershey has just announced price increases of about 10% on their entire line of products.
They're already charging $1.50 for a chocolate bar.
So if you like chocolate, you better start stocking up now. Cocoa production is being seriously threatened by political unrest in Africa right now. The recent chaos in Ivory Coast is certainly not good news for Hershey, but the truth is that all of the long-term trends indicate that prices for commodities such as coffee, cocoa, and sugar are going to move up anyway. In fact, Aaron Smith, the managing director of Superfund Financial, believes that coffee, sugar, and cocoa will be 5 to 10 times more expensive by 2014 than they are today. If you are addicted to coffee or to sugar, you might want to start making your plans accordingly. But the truth is that inflation is not limited to just a few commodities. Virtually every major agricultural commodity has soared in price over the past 6 months. So what is the cause of this? Well, there are several factors which are major contributors. First of all, overall global demand continues to increase. The population of the world continues to grow, and the economies of nations such as China and India develop. India developed millions more people want to enjoy luxury items such as chocolate and coffee, just like Americans do. Secondly, all over the world, central banks have been recklessly printing money in an attempt to stimulate their economies. But this is also going to end up causing tremendous inflation. So
how does that work? Well, it's actually very simple. For example, in the United States, when there are more dollars chasing the same number of goods and services, what is going to happen? Prices are going to rise, of course. And we are seeing this happen all over the world right now. Thirdly, as the price of oil continues to rise, it is going to increase the cost of everything else. The era of massive amounts of cheap food being transported around the world using massive quantities of cheap oil is rapidly coming to an end. And the following chart, from the Federal Reserve, it shows that the price of oil is rapidly moving back to the level it was prior to the financial
crisis
in 2008. In fact, the chart is slightly out of date. At last check, the price of oil was over $107 a barrel. So what is it going to mean for our economy if we soon surpass the record that was set back in 2008?
Well, we already did. It's up to, it's up to how much it, we practically, gas in Connecticut is over $4 a gallon.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the price of gas of oil is, but I did hear that it had declined.
Yeah, but it's like...
How much of a decline, I don't know.
Fourth, that's what I like about Trump. You know what Trump said?
What?
That if he was president, he would say to OPEC, no more, we will not pay you any more than $40 to $50 per barrel.
If you don't like it, sell it to somebody else.
If you don't like it, sell it elsewhere. But we're not going to buy it from you anymore. Unless it's $40 to $50 a barrel.
What are they going to do?
If they don't, they'll just be stuck with $100 barrels of oil.
Yeah.
They can't unload. Because we'll start drilling our own at that.
Fourthly, global instability is also going to cause prices to continue to rise. Over the past year, we have had really bizarre weather all over the globe. We have seen revolutions erupt all over Africa and the Middle East, and the third largest economy in the world, Japan, just experienced the worst disaster they have been through since World War II ended. When things are unstable, economies don't work efficiently. That means that less goods and services are produced. But when there are less goods and services being chased by an increasing amount of money, that tends to push up the prices. The truth is that inflation is here, and if the CEO of Walmart is right, It is not going to go away anytime soon. In fact, many believe the world is on the verge of another major economic crisis. If you stop and think about it, every major region of the world is dealing with very serious problems right now. Right now, the European debt crisis is worse than it has ever been before. Did you notice that Standard & Poor's just downgraded Portugal's debt for the second time in a week? Now Portuguese debt is rated at BB-, which is only one level above junk status. This is a very alarming sign. Asia is dealing with the Japanese crisis. Nearly all of the countries in the Middle East are dealing with protests or full-blown revolutions. Africa is dealing with the war in Libya and quite a few revolutions of their own. And the U.S. is still deeply struggling with a whole host of economic problems. Most Americans just don't realize how precarious things are at the moment for the global economy. The financial crisis of 2008 did a lot of lasting damage, and the next wave of financial crises could potentially be even worse. Unfortunately, the global financial system is more vulnerable than ever right now. So what are the Federal Reserve and other central banks going to do the next time a major financial crisis happens? They're going to print even larger quantities of money, and they're going to get an even larger bailout to their friends, of course. The dollars that you have today are never going to be more valuable than they are right now. Don't wait too long to use them. If you have a huge pile of dollars sitting in your bank, your wealth is slowly but surely rotting away. Very hard economic times are coming. The inflation that the CEO of Walmart is warning about is only the beginning. Eventually, we're going to see inflation in this country that is going to be absolutely mind-blowing. And don't wait until the storm hits to start preparing. We all have time now to prepare, so let's be wise and make the most of it.
You know,
that's a scary article.
Yeah, but I don't like that article, but I'll tell you why. Because Walmart's a greedy son of a bitch. You know, they're greed. I mean, total greed. And if Walmart is going to raise prices, it's only because Walmart wants to justify raising prices. And all these assholes want to squeeze the death out of the American people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, money's money. You know what I mean? Make the goods and the money, you know.
Well, they have to pay more to China for the stuff.
Yeah.
Because China's economy is booming and they, you know. Well, this is quite a picture.
I'm trying to think here. Blunted to reality wrap.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Looks like the light bulb's on and something's starting to happen. It's tough to comprehend when your belief system shatters. The world's not like we thought it was. Reality's not what it seems. What we've been conditioned to perceive. It's like a dream, but the world is waking up. People are actually starting to notice and understand that everything alive, everyone's alive.
I think that everyone lives a part of this. I think that's what they mean, that everyone lives a part of this whole process. Politicians don't run the world. Bankers do. The situation's obvious, but we never think it through. The BBC, CNN, and all the daily papers, just propaganda tools for the real decision makers. The presidents, prime ministers, and chancellors are puppets, and Obama's no different, people. Some say the biggest Muppet. They keep up the illusions. They feel we're free and play the role. Spotting what they've told to say is the teleprompter roles. The New World Order tiptoes on bankers enslave and rape us. But it's Jordan's tits and Rooney's fees that make the front page of the papers. It's a rhyme.
Yeah, it's
a poem.
Reality rap.
Yeah.
Anyway, North Carolina, not the only state trying to criminalize alternative health services. Mm-hmm. A closer look at the attempt by North Carolina legislators to criminalize anything other than state-sponsored health care is quite revealing. Below is the bill text. Some observation about the language, or lack of, defining what this bill is actually intended to do. What is apparent is that it is first step in implementing various aspects of Codex Alimentarius, which excludes all health practices not listed in the Codex. Codex specifically targets and intends to end the use of alternative therapies and also vitamins and supplements.
Huh.
We read something like this once before.
Yeah, last
week.
A week ago.
Right, but this is an update, I guess. Please note that this bill does not contain any statement of legislative intent. In other words, what is the intention of the bill exactly? Now, common sense would tell you that in all likelihood, North Carolina already does have laws, statutes, codes, whatever else that they could throw in there on the books regarding the practice of medicine. I think it's safe to presume that there are also copious amounts of criminal statutes, regulations, etc. So what could they be possibly future intention and use of this bill? As obviously, it is not to simply rein in marauding fraudulent medical practitioners who might be invading North Carolina, or performing surgeries or handing out toxic pharmaceuticals and not paying a fee to the state to perform these activities. The books are full of laws criminalizing and enforcement of illegal medicine.
Well, let's look at the bill here. So the first thing this tells you about the bill, you really need to go to this article. It's very long, Leo. It tells all about the bill and how it's written and the wording. It's the wording of the bill that they're concerned about, the words that they use. So you really let's give the folks at home an idea of where the what the bill is, so they can read it themselves.
Yeah, let's see here.
Keep going and we'll see where this is from.
Well, this is you can get it from the PPJ Gazette. That's PPJ Gazette. Okay, and
by Marty Oakley.
Yeah, North Carolina, not the only state trying to criminalize alternative medicine
services.
Health services. Yeah. Okay, and you can check that out.
Or you can go to David Icke's site. It's on there.
Yeah. But if you want to check this out, just go to the PBJ Gazette. Okay?
PPJ.
What did I say?
PBJ.
PPJ.
not the Peanut Butter and Jelly Gazette, but the PPJ Gazette.
PPJ Gazette.
Let's play this.
You put Lord Blankfein in the ass prison. For 1 6-month term, and all the bullshit would stop. All over Wall Street, say, as a former congressional aide, that's all it would take, just once. Whatever that means. Too much regulation is bad.
Let's see.
This is about 10 minutes.
Let's just see if it's any good.
Yeah. Here's a question. Why isn't Wall Street in jail? It's a question I love. It's also the title of a great new expose in Rolling Stone. Reporter Matt Taibbi, I'll talk to in just a moment, wanted to find an answer to that question, so he started looking into it, and a Senate investigator gave him this spoiler alert. Quote, everything's effed up, and nobody goes to jail. That's the whole story right there. Now, that turns out to be slightly inaccurate. Actually, one guy did go to jail. His name is Bernie Madoff. He's the Ponzi schemer who's serving a 150-year prison sentence. But he said in a jailhouse interview released today in the New York Times, quote, the banks have to know. But the attitude was sort of, if you're doing something wrong, we don't want to know. And that gets it exactly right. They didn't want to know. They're making money hand over fist. Who wants to find out? By the way, you know why Madoff went to jail and no one else did? He stole from the rich. That was stupid. If you steal from the average guy, you get away with it. Now, you want to see examples? How about Dick Fulton? He was running Lehman Brothers, and of course, it imploded. You know what he walked away with? $529 million. He's suspected of hiding compensation to make it appear that he got less, and he's also suspected of lying about his compensation to Congress. What kind of charges did he get? None. How about punishment? Squat. Now let's go to Joe Cassano. He worked for AIG Financial Products, which crashed spectacularly. And by the way, that was largely thanks to Joe Cassano. Nice work, Joe. And he walked away with $280 million during his tenure. He's suspected of misrepresenting the risk of mortgage derivatives, which he famously said wouldn't, quote, lose a single dollar in the market. What kind of charges did he face? Oh, my God, look at that. He also faced no charges. How about punishment? A zilcho. Who could have seen that coming? How about John Mack? He was the on-again, off-again head, and actually is the current chairman of the board of Morgan Stanley. He was investigated in 2005 for allegedly giving out insider information, which may have resulted in a quid pro quo deal worth $10 million to him personally. He also faced no charges and no punishment. And the way that that went down is actually a perfect illustration of everything that's wrong with our financial system and why they get away with all this. Gary Aguirre was the SEC investigator who smelled something fishy in Mack's dealing, so he wanted to look into it. And he, basically, this is a good guy. He was trying to do the right thing. So what happened to Gary? Well, he went to his bosses. And his boss at the time were Paul Berger. He was the SEC's Associate Director of Enforcement. Oh, he got fired, but we're going to get back to that in a second. All right. So he goes to his boss, the guy we just told you about. And now, where does his boss at the time work for today? Are you sitting down? Morgan Stanley. Weird. The guy who wouldn't prosecute now works for the guy he wouldn't prosecute. Then Linda Thompson. She was the SEC's Director of Enforcement, another boss of Gary. Guess where she's now? She's a lawyer representing Wall Street firms. Weird, huh? I didn't see that coming. Now, here are the external forces who pushed back on the SEC to make sure that there was no investigation. Mary Jo White, she was an attorney representing Morgan Stanley. Guess where she was before that? She was a U.S. attorney in New York, the top cop on Wall Street. And, of course, there was Gary Lynch. That was Mac's attorney. Before that, he was the SEC's director of enforcement. Do you see what's happening here, guys? It's called a revolving door. They're waiting for the payout. Are you going to go investigate the guy who might give you millions of dollars in your next job? Well, if you're a really good guy like Gary, you might. And remember what happened to Gary. Now let's do it. Boom. Fired. Gone. Everybody else gets paid. Gary gets fired for being the good guy. Now you see how they get away with it? All right, let's do more, though. Joining me now is Matt Taibbi, the guy who wrote that article. He's a contributing editor for Rolling Stone. And, by the way, that article appears in the new issue of Rolling Stone. It's fascinating. All right, Matt, look, I got a lot of guys who I went to school with who are part of this circuit. And if you go tell them what you tell them, or if I tell them that, they go, oh, come on, you're being totally unfair, right?
Right.
Are we being unfair to them? They're just good guys trying to do their job?
No, I'm not. We're not being unfair. Look, in this country, the reality is if you go out and you sell a dime bag on the street and the cop sees you, there's a very good chance that you will actually go to jail. You will do real jail time. But insider trading, fraud on a massive scale, stealing billions of dollars, putting a million people into foreclosure, defrauding thousands of janitors and cops and firemen out of their pensions. Nobody's going to jail for this stuff. It's really a class issue. These guys do not go to jail. Madoff was the only person in the entire financial crisis who's doing time. Even somebody like Angelo Mozilo, they couldn't find a way to put him in jail, and all they did was fine him less than half of his net worth. So it's an incredible situation. It's really, really dangerous for the country.
So, Matt, look, a lot of them will say, look, I used bad judgment. My bad, dog. Okay, so I lost, you know, a couple of billion dollars, but there's nothing criminal here.
Right. No. Look, all of these banks on a larger level were complicit in a sort of a general fraud scheme, and that fraud scheme was to sell mortgage-backed securities, toxic mortgage-backed securities as AAA-rated investments. During this mortgage boom, they were essentially selling worthless crap as AAA-rated investments, and they were selling it to people like pension funds. That's why your pension has decreased in value, because some bank sold you phony securities that they knew were going to blow up. That's securities fraud. That's a broad fraud scheme that all these banks were complicit in. But at another level, they were also involved in basically every kind of crime you could have in the financial services market. Insider trading, they were hiding billions of dollars of losses. Lots of these banks were involved in Enron-esque schemes to hide losses. Again, fraud, insider trading, all that stuff was going on, and nobody got prosecuted for it.
At the banks, were there emails specifically saying, hey, we know this stuff is toxic, or we know it's not going to work, or we know it's junk?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a great example is the Bear Stearns hedge fund that blew up. This is the one case that they actually took to trial, where these guys who were running this hedge fund that involved subprime mortgages, and that was the blowing up of this fund was what caused Bear Stearns to go out of business. But they had emails from these guys telling their bosses, look, we are never going to make money on this stuff. And then a few days later, they were out saying publicly, this isn't a disaster, it's all going to be fine. And that's just straight up fraud when they do that. That's what a Wall Street crime looks like, and they weren't convicted for it.
Right. And then you got Goldman Sachs emails saying, hey, we're selling crappy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you got Mozilla and his email saying, I can't believe we're selling this crap. So, but if people at home got to be wondering, so why are they doing it, right? Like, it seems like that's going to sink your company. And it sunk AIG, sunk Lehman Brothers. So why'd they do it anyway?
What people have to understand is that the system of incentives on Wall Street has been completely perverted. I mean, all of these guys, it doesn't matter. They don't care if they blow up their companies. They don't care if we end up having to bail them out. They get bonuses anyway. All of these guys, even the ones who are in disgrace now, guys like Joe Cassano, who helped blow up AIG, he lost, he made $280 million, and he's keeping all that money. It doesn't matter how irresponsible or how wrong you are. The incentives are there for these guys to do all this stuff because they never have to pay in the end.
The taxpayers had to pay every dime of that $280 million eventually when AIG went under, and the guy gets to keep it. It's crazy. But it's not crazy because, as you explained, to finish that up for us, why don't they prosecute?
Well, it's. I think the key issue here is the revolving door. I mean, I think that every source that I talked to in researching this story pointed out the same thing. All these guys, you know, the two main cops are the SEC and the U.S. Attorney here in New York. If you are one of the top investigators in the SEC or the U.S. Attorney's office, when you leave those offices, there's a partnership waiting for you at one of these big corporate defense firms, and those partnerships are worth millions of dollars a year. These guys are all the equivalent of college basketball players waiting for their first NBA deal. It's an enormous amount of money, and so what ends up happening is it's a collegial sort of merry-go-round of lawyers who all know each other. They're all on the first-name basis with each other. You have a situation like Aguirre. You know, he's trying to investigate Morgan Stanley, and the Morgan Stanley's lawyers are going five levels over his head to talk to the director of enforcement. They're talking to his boss's boss's boss while he's trying to prosecute this case.
Right, and at the very least, it's implicit, saying, hey, you're good, you're a team player, we got a job at Morgan Stanley waiting for you with millions of dollars.
Absolutely.
Or the law firm that is working for Morgan Stanley, and that's how it works. That's why there's no prosecutions. Great piece, Matt. Really appreciate your time tonight.
Thanks. Good to see you, Jack.
All right. Now.
Hey. That was quite informative, wasn't it, folks?
Yeah, that was on YouTube. That was Sank Erger.
Matt Taibbi.
Yeah.
And he's also written The Real Housewives of Wall Street. Yeah.
Did you write
that? Yeah, Matt Taibbi, The Real Housewives of Wall Street.
Yeah.
How Morgan Stanley wives Christy Mack and Susan Karacheff ripped off taxpayers in the Geithner-Bernanke bailout scheme.
Okay, let's just see. But if you want to get a true sense of what the shadow budget is all about, all you have to do is look closely at the taxpayer money handed over to a single company that goes by a seemingly innocuous name, Waterfall Talf Opportunity. At first glance, Waterfall's haul doesn't seem at all that huge. Just nine loans totaling some $220 million made through a Fed bailout program. That doesn't seem like a lot, considering that Goldman Sachs alone received roughly $800 billion in loans from the Fed. But upon closer inspection, Waterfall Talf Opportunity boasts a couple of interesting names among its chief investors, Christy Mack and Susan Karacheff.
Christy is the wife of John Mack, the chairman of Morgan Stanley. Susan is the widow of Peter Karacheff, a close friend of the Macks, who served as president of Morgan Stanley's investment banking division. Neither woman appears to have any serious history in business, apart from a few philanthropic experiences, yet the Federal Reserve handed them both low-interest loans of nearly $250 million through a complicated bailout program that virtually guaranteed them millions in risk-free income.
Good Lord.
And that's how the money, taxpayers' money, gets transferred from the taxpayers to the wealthy.
Sick mothers. What it says he's ruining. Most Americans know about that budget. What they don't know is that there's a complete budget of roughly equal theft, tragically maintaining complete secrecy.
Traditionally maintaining complete secrecy.
Yeah. After the financial crash of 2008, it grew to monstrous dimensions as the government attempted to unfreeze the credit markets by handing out trillions to banks and hedge funds. And thanks to a whole galaxy of obscure acronym-laden bailout programs, it eventually rivaled the official budget in size, a huge, roaring river of cash flowing out of the Federal Reserve to destinations neither chosen by the President nor reviewed by Congress, but instead handed out by fiat, by unelected Fed officials using a seemingly nonsensical and apparently unknowable methodology.
Now, following an act of Congress that has forced the Fed to open its books from the bailout era, this unofficial budget is for the first time becoming at least partially a matter of public record. Staffers in the Senate and the House, whose queries about Fed spending have been rebuffed for nearly a century, are now poring over 21,000 transactions and discovering a host of outrages, lunacies, in the other budget. It is as though someone sat down and made a list of every individual on the earth who actually did not need emergency financial assistance from the United States government and then handed them the keys to the public treasure. The Fed sent billions in bailout aid to banks in places like Mexico, Bahrain, Bavaria, millions more to a spate of Japanese car companies, more than $2 trillion in loans to Citigroup and Morgan Stanley, and billions more to a string of lesser millionaires and billionaires with Cayman Island addresses. Our jaws are literally dropping as we're reading this, says Warren Gunnels, an aide to Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. Every one of these transactions is outrageous. But if you want to get a true sense of what the shadow budget is all about, all you have to do is look closely at the taxpayer money handed out over to a single company that goes by the innocuous name of Waterfall Talif Opportunity. And that's the one that's owned by Christy Mack and Susan Karchess. Christy is the wife of John Mack, chairman of Morgan Stanley, and Susan is the widow of Peter Karchess, a close friend of the Macks. The technical name of the program the Mack and Karchess took advantage of is TALF, short for Term Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facility. But the federal aid they received actually falls under a broader category of bailout initiatives designed and perfected by the Federal Reserve Chief Ben Bernanke and Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, called giving already stinking rich people gobs of money for no fucking reason at all. And if you want to learn how the shadow budget works, follow along. This is what welfare for the rich looks like. And you can read it. You can continue reading that at Rolling Stone. That's sick.
Oh, boy. End of it.
Well, there's a Rolling Stone article. And this is long, so I think we should go to something else. You can read this article in Rolling Stone by Matt Taibbi.
Yeah. Oh, let's see.
Just X that out the real quick. Too long for us to
read. Pretty sick crap, anyway. I don't know. Should we read that? I'm very concerned about the, very, very concerned about it.
There's nothing you can do about it. So
the treatments for nuclear contamination. Besides having iodine on hand for emergencies, we can grow and at present purchase herbs and foods that prevent our bodies from storing radioactive particles. Some of these foods and herbs have each removed radioactive particles from our bodies. As we are already being affected by radiation released by numerous sources, eating these foods and doing detoxification and
chelation
protocols regularly is a good idea. If you have been exposed to too many x-rays or CAT scans, if you fly too much, work with diagnostic medical equipment, or are environmentally sensitive and have ingested elevated levels of radioactive contaminated food, air, or water, you also want to partake of the following protocol for a regular basis. Should we mention it?
Yeah, let's talk
about
it.
This, what the protocol is.
Is it too early?
Is it too early for North America to prepare for radiation?
Well, let's find out what you have to
down,
do.
Blah, blah, blah. Okay. Besides...
Oh, if you have been exposed, here. The oral administration of sodium bicarbonate diminishes the severity of the changes produced by uranium in the kidneys. The kidneys are usually the first organs to show chemical damage upon uranium exposure. Old military manuals suggest doses or infusions of sodium bicarbonate to help alkalize the urine if this happens. This makes urinal ion less kidney toxic and promotes excretion of the non-toxic uranium carbonate complex. The oral administration of sodium bicarbonate diminishes the severity of the changes produced by uranium in the kidneys. So useful and strong is sodium bicarbonate that the Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico researcher Don York has used baking soda to clean soil contaminated with uranium.
Sodium bicarbonate binds with uranium, separating it from the dirt. So far, York has removed as much as 92% of the uranium from contaminated soil samples. Started writing about
baking soda
after discovering that the United States Army recommends the use of bicarbonate to protect the kidneys from radiation damage. Sodium bicarbonate can safely remove paint, grease, oil, and smoke residue, decreasing workers' exposure to harsh chemicals and eliminating much of the hazardous waste associated with other cleaners. Sodium bicarbonate is able to clean in areas where other surfaces pose fire hazards, because baking soda is a natural fire extinguisher, a general manager of said Arm & Hammer. This is the reason it's used on oncology centers to control chemo agent spills, and it's actually used intravenously to protect patients from the hazardous toxicity of chemotherapy. I didn't know that. Uranium is one of the only metals that get significant bonding from carbonate. Such flushing a lot of
bicarbonate
to the system, along with whatever kidney support you are going to use, will be very helpful. So this is no better therapy for radiation sickness than intense sodium bicarbonate and manganese baths with the appropriate clay added in. Even sodium
theosulfate, can
be added to these baths, and that instantly neutralizes any chlorine in the bath water, while simultaneously providing sulfur for the vital sulfur pathways.
If the bombs start dropping anywhere on Earth, or if you live near a nuclear plant, you might want to have a large amount of sodium bicarbonate on hand. Minimum stock should be 25 or 50 pounds. Normally, I recommend someone start with using 1 pound of bicarbonate in a bath. That could easily be 2 to 3 pounds in an emergency situation. It is not a joke that one can get 50 pounds of the most powerful medicine on Earth for $35. You will also need a lot of magnesium salts, and the very best and most penetrating of them is the magnesium chloride, in the form of magnesium bath flakes. Dead sea salt is also quite fine for this application. Exposure to radiation causes a cascade of free radicals that wreak havoc on the body. Radiation decimates the body's supply of
glutathione.
I don't even know what that is.
I don't know. Please read my essay, Glutathione and Bicarbonate Nubilization. Nubilization is one of the best ways to quickly increase glutathione levels, as is the use of glutathione suppositories. The main cancer risk for inhaled uranium oxides and other airborne radioactive particles would be from tiny insoluble particles lodged deep in the lungs. That's a good reason to nebulize both glutathione and bicarbonate directly into the lungs. And one must
wonder what
governments and health officials have not sponsored this treatment. Dr. Sarah Mayo, speaking about uranium oxide, says it can be inhaled by soldiers and civilians. It sticks to the lining of the lungs. It's taken up by cells of the immune system and gets into lymph glands, bone, brain, hormone-producing glands, ovaries, and testes. It stays in these organs for many decades and is only very slowly excreted in urine. Nubilization transdermally treats the lung tissues, allowing for best effect on contaminated lung tissues. That's all through sodium bicarbonate.
Yeah, you need to have a detoxification. That's what this Dr. Chris Shade.
I have had the pleasure through the years to learn some of the most intelligent doctors and scientists about heavy metal chelation and the opening of detoxification pathways. The individual who wins the Nobel Prize in the area of chelation, the scientist with the greatest genius, especially when it comes to mercury chelation, is Dr. Chris Shade. He has developed a sophisticated detoxification system based on enhancing the natural removal of metals through the intestines.
Though his specialty is mercury and detoxification and chelation of radiation poisons, use the same pathways as mercury. He has developed three products that are effective for the removal of mercury, including the liposome formula that allowed us to get glutathione into the system via oral administration. For more information on ordering his products, you have a phone number to call there. Combining his formulas with heavy metal detox from Dr. George Giorgio, another medical genius, gives us, in my opinion, the best possible medical formula to help remove radioactive contamination, as long as iodine, magnesium chloride, a superfood spirulina-based formula like Rejuvenate and edible clay are used as well. Rejuvenate is a powerful chlorophyll-rich formula that is easy to administer in high quantities because of its exceptionally pleasant taste. The intense levels of RNA in Rejuvenate will quickly help to build up a person's immune system and help them recover with RNA-DNA damage caused by, from the RNA-DNA damage caused by radiation exposure.
And the article's very long. It goes on and on and on. So if you want, there's a bunch of comments too. But if you really are interested, please go to Dr. Sirius. Circus, S-I-R-C-U-S, apostrophe, blog.
Dr. Circus's blog.
Right.
Treatment for nuclear contamination.
Right.
Natural chelation clay and baking soda. Iodine, glutathione, which I never heard of. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, we got about 10 minutes.
There might be something else you can play here.
Yeah. Oh, this is funny. Feds blame cancer patient urine for radioactive iodine in the drinking water. Yeah. The feds scooped to a new low, offering up cancer patients urinating in their toilets as the excuse for radioactive iodine in the drinking water. Next week, they'll tell us that the iodine is getting into the air from cancer patients pissing in the wind.
Yeah. Let's just go down and see if there's anything else.
Okay. Washington mayor arrested in protest. Vincent Gray, the mayor of U.S. capital city of Washington, was arrested during a protest over the budget deal struck to avoid a federal government shutdown, local media reported. Some 41 of the roughly 150 demonstrators protesting details of the deal, which involved how the District of Columbia government can spend its money, were arrested. Gray among them, NBC television reported. So, I mean, they got a walk. I think they got a wicked deal there in Washington, D.C., you know?
They can't even control what they do.
No, they can't. They have no control.
Terror attack. Deadly metro blast shocks Belarus capital, Minsk.
Hear about that?
Explosion has rocked a metro station in Minsk in the capital of Belarus with reports of rising casualties. Our correspondent Sarah Firth there will be bringing us the latest. Eyewitnesses say that people have died in an explosion at that metro station tonight in the capital. At least seven people have been killed. These are unofficial figures. These are the latest pictures we've got released online by some of the eyewitnesses. You can see the metro station after the blast and the people running away. A lot of panic and confusion naturally caused there. As I say, seven killed in that explosion at the Oktyabrskaya metro station in Minsk earlier on, rush hours.
That was from Russian TV. Check that out.
Yeah. Well, big oil triggered.
New Madrid.
Excuse me.
Will big oil trigger the new Madrid megaquake?
Hmm.
Something really fishy, as usual, is going on in the oil industry. And again, it's regarding the Gulf. Several newspapers recently announced that the BP was being given permission to restart drilling and would even start new wells in the explosive Moncando region where the last catastrophe was precipitated. Yes, insane corporate greed is at the least, the very least. And let's go to that for a minute and see what that's about.
Huh.
This is from where? From
this is up
before it's news, I
It was reported that oil giant BP plans to restart deepwater drilling in the Gulf of Mexico this summer, just a year after the Deepwater Horizon explosion that sparked the worst oil spill in history. The group continues to start work on 10 wells in the Gulf after being granted permission by the U.S. regulators to continue work halted at the time of the drilling moratorium imposed after the spill. The move is likely to fuel public anger coming just after the just coming a year after a devastating oil spill, which happened when a BP well exploded, killing 11 workers and causing an environmental crisis. The permission that was reported to have been given by some judge, however, was thereafter adamantly denied, and the article about this permission seems to have been carefully scrubbed from the net. Here's the official denial.
The U.S. Interior Secretary on Monday rejected media reports that BP was striking a deal to resume deepwater drilling in the Gulf of Mexico a year after the worst oil spill in U.S. history. UK media said BP and its talks with the U.S. government to start drilling an existing well less than a year after the blast on deepwater rig ruptured BP's underwater Mikado well. So it makes you wonder all the more. Don't worry, they'll get this their permission. This is testing the waters, so to speak.
Every day, millions of gallons of oil are being extracted from beneath the Gulf and the Mississippi Basin all the way to the heart of the New Madrid Fault line through Arkansas and on up to Illinois and Indiana. Not only are oil and natural gas being extracted, but chemically enhanced water is being pumped into the rock strata to free up more oil and natural gas in a process called fracking. Hydraulic fracking is a process that results in the creation of fractures in rocks. The fracturing is done from a wellbore drilled into a reservoir rock formation to increase the rate and ultimate recovery of oil and natural gas.
Hydraulic fractures may be natural or man-made and are extended by internal fluid pressure, which opens the fracture and causes it to extend through the rock. Natural hydraulic fractures include volcanic dikes, sills, and fracturing ice by ice as a frost weathering. Man-made fluid-driven fractures are formed at depths in a borehole and extend into targeted formations. The fracture's width is typically maintained after the injection by introducing a propellant into the injected fluid. Propellant is a material such as grains of sand, ceramic, and other particulates that prevent the fractures from closing when the injection is stopped.
Let's see, we only have a couple of seconds, that's all. Let's go down to what the conclusion of this. Oh, fracking, the conclusion is that fracking causes earthquakes.
Right.
When you drain vast cavities and split the earth underground, you're bound to get some repercussions, especially if it's right along a known fault line. Concerned locals right on the New Madrid fault line in Arkansas know exactly what the fracking is doing and had this to say just a few weeks ago. People in the Greenbrier, Arkansas area are uncertain of one thing. As the drilling and fracking increased in the area, so do the earthquakes. Greenbrier resident Dick Dertrick lives on the ridge between Guy and Greenbrier. He was watching the rigs. As soon as they increased drilling and fracking on the Greenbrier side, then the Greenbrier quakes started increasing in intensity and frequency. They feel really different now, Dertrick said. He described the sensation as waves rolling underneath them, and when it hit, it sounds like a boom. He believes the injection wells have a lot to do with the quakes, but blames all of the activity, including fracking, and compressor stations. During the snowstorm, Dertrick noticed all gas activity stopped. No compressors running, no drilling, no fracking, no injections. Guess what? He said he looked at the USGS data, and there were no earthquakes for 3 days following the snow.
Now, I was just going to say, we got about less than a minute left, and I want to say thanks to everybody for joining us, and please join me tomorrow night on Thursday night and Friday night with Lila and George Dixon. And I hope you have a good evening. I just wanted to, we're just going to complete this and then you leave. That sound good?
So they know earthquakes when they don't.
When they don't do that, right?
When they don't have that activity.
You also notice a cluster of small quakes on the Tennessee side of the Mississippi River.
Same day
as some larger ones in Greenbrier. He feared the gas production could trigger a big one in Bosque South and New Madrid Fault. We've had many assurances from experts that will probably never happen, but still, they tell us to make plans for emergency preparation. It must be wonderful living next to that nightmare.
Yeah, goes all the way up to Chicago.
Yeah, so if you're interested in reading this, it's a good article. Unfortunately, I don't know the name of the place.
Keep going.
What the name of the website is.
Well, you have to go to David Icke.
Tsunami Jesus.
Well, just tell him to go. Did we just say go to David Icke and it's on there? That's where you'll find it.
Oh, zengardener.com.
Mm-hmm. And
zengardener.com is the
site, I guess.
When zengardener.com. Okay.
Quite a good article.
Yeah.
It's got good graphics on there.
A lot of interesting stuff here, so. I suggest you take a look at it. Anyway,
we've come to the end of our time.
Yeah. And that's about it. We'll leave you with a song. What do you think?
Yeah. There's a lot of good news, but
you'll
have to find it for yourself, folks. So.
Really funny. Yeah, so we'll pick up on this next week.
Yeah.
Get more news and views. But in the meantime, we hope you enjoy the show.
And enjoy the rest of your week, and I hope you have a pleasant evening. Good night, folks.
Yeah, we do too. And one and two. Let me get my switchboard back.
You can play your going out song.
Yeah.
Your goodbye song.
Your goodbye song, as long as I can get the switchboard back. Here it is.
There it is.
I'll see if they'll let me play. Well, they won't. Because it's been disconnected. And why did they disconnect it?
You want to find out. I thought you could go over your time.
We can.
But they apparently...
For some reason, the phone's still on. It doesn't disconnect there. And it disconnected everything else.
You ought to ask about that.
Anyway, good night, folks.